welcome to episode 352 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and I'm going to be talking in detail about Medieval Spawn and Witchblade number one, and in general terms about Medieval Spawn and Witchblade issue number two, which came out on June 6th. So it's just been released, hit shops yesterday. So that's part of the reason I don't want to talk about it too in detail, because I know there may be some of you out there who haven't had a chance to pick it up and read it yet. So again, spoilers for issue one. Issue two I'll talk about in broader terms, and we may come back and explore issue two in more detail later. So we did a Spawn, Medieval Spawn and Witchblade episode already right after issue one, or I think I actually recorded it right before issue one came out, with Brian Haberlin, who is one of the co-creators of Medieval Spawn and also is handling the art duties on the miniseries, as well as some of the writing duties along with Brian Holgren. So that was an interview I did at Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario, California. And I just thought I would go back and talk more in depth about issue one, since the interview I had with Brian, we didn't necessarily go into details on issue one. So I do encourage you to go back and listen to what Brian had to say, though. And don't forget about the augmented reality, the Medieval Spawn Witchblade app that's available from the App Store and I think iTunes or whatever, the Google Play Store, I guess, or the App Store if you have an Apple device. So, all right, let's get on with the overview. The issue starts out, we see a band of, I guess you'd say, militia. You can tell they're not necessarily seasoned and trained soldiers. You see a lot of pitchforks. You see, you know, mismatched armor. But they are fighting. And the forces that they're fighting look to be very evil, undead, a lot of sharp fangs, a lot of misshapen bodies. So clearly some kind of monsters who, to some extent, are undead, because they don't succumb when they're run through with a sword. So basically the farmers, the villagers, start to retreat because they're basically being cut down. It's pretty much a slaughter. And while this is happening, a horn blows, and with the arrival of a legend, a Medieval Spawn, it's an amazing full splash page of a new version of Medieval Spawn, you know, complete with flowing cape and glowing green eyes, a shield, a pretty awesome looking green, the sword is not green, but the blade glows green with that greenish Spawn energy. And he pretty much makes short work of the undead creatures that were attacking the armed villagers. And they beat a hasty retreat. The villagers are happy. They start yelling about the king has returned. So we'll learn more about that in a minute. Meanwhile, a crow who oversaw the battle from his lofty perch, it says he ignores his natural instinct to feed on the dead because he's faithful to a higher unnatural instinct. And he heads to a castle overlooking... it looks like it's overlooking the battlefield to some extent, but it doesn't look like it's in great repair. There's some evil-looking vines growing over it. The background is really dark and moody as far as the sky goes. And we see what appears to be a queen on the throne who has some kind of a feather crown. Looks very bird-like in and of itself. And she... what did you see with those pretty eyes? And then sticks her thumbs actually into the bird's eyes and gets a vision of Medieval Spawn and remarks to herself, so they found a champion. and calls forth a champion of her own, her loyal Scourge, who appears to be a larger, more well-armed, undead creature who is her champion, apparently, with some glowing red eyes. So she sends that champion out to find Medieval Spawn. Meanwhile, back on the battlefield, one of the young villagers who was fighting approaches Medieval Spawn and says, "Welcome home, my king." And his Medieval Spawn doesn't seem to have much memory. He says, "King, no, I'm a simple warrior." But the squire responds, "No, I would recognize that sword. You are King Valon, and that's your sword, Peacebringer. Every child knows of the legend," and offers his services as squire. And Medieval Spawn says that, yeah, perhaps his memory is clouded. Perhaps he is the king. And he removes his helm. And the villagers, you know, now keep in mind, these villagers were just fighting these evil, ugly, undead creatures. But to a man, they're taken aback when they see what Medieval Spawn looks like without his helmet on. We don't get a chance to see. We only see him from behind. But the squire responds, "Perhaps you better put it back on." So as the villagers retreat, go back to their village again, we see it's very run down. People don't appear to be in very good shape. And there is a lord keeper there, a woman who's told the tale 100 times. But tonight there's a new sense of excitement. And basically this is the villager that's in charge of keeping their history, which is an oral history. And so she recounts the tale of Prince Valon. He was a noble thane, and his princedom, though a minor one, he had united the rival tribes of the region and defended the kingdom from barbarians, built a castle. And so for all intents and purposes, it seems like he was a pretty good king, had a good friend, had a wonderful queen that he cared about. There's some hints that there could have been kind of like a Guinevere Lancelot thing going on between his best friend and his queen. So perhaps hints of a love triangle there. And despite her misgivings, the king was called away to battle and apparently was killed. And Leith, who was his best friend, and maybe that the third leg of that triangle, or the third point of that love triangle, he's the only one that returned. And in her grief, the queen dismissed all the courtiers and guards, and the gates of the castle were shut, the drawbridge was raised, and the queen was never seen again. And then we get a tale of darkness starting to spread across the land. So again, kind of similar to the legend of King Arthur and Camelot and what happened after Sir Lancelot's betrayal there. Talks about the blight that spread across the land. Countless souls died from disease and starvation. Merchant ships wouldn't dock at their ports anymore. The undead started showing up, and those that remain barely eke out a living on the barren edges of the realm. But now even now, the darkness returns. Every new moon bleeds further darkness into their land. And there are those that say that King Valon didn't truly die. His queen's spells protected him. And in their darkest days, he will return to reclaim his kingdom. So it seems that this tale has reawakened the memories of King Valon. And it, in fact, is Medieval Spawn. He seems to remember Leith and Rael, the queen, but I don't know. It's not, I mean, he has the sword, but is he really Medieval Spawn? Is Medieval Spawn really King Valon? It's not completely clear. I mean, it seems to be implied that he is. And again, he has the sword, but anyone can pick up a sword. And so maybe he's just projecting, right? He's remembering because he just heard the story. So it's not completely clear. Although he claims he does remember the land, though not like this, and he pictures it as green and pleasant landscape and teeming with life, and not the evil landscape that it is now. So meanwhile, the rest of the village soldiers who are there spread out amongst the people that are left and tells tales of his heroism upon his return, as well as tales of the heroism of some of the other villagers who lost their lives in that battle, and they managed to raise an army for medieval Spawn or King Valen, if that is indeed who he is. Meanwhile, he's out riding his lands, remembering there's almost like a Stonehenge-like looking place. He remembers his queen Rael dancing there. And while he's reminiscing, some, I guess they're fairy folk show up, and they look very much human, but they kind of appear out of nowhere. And their leader says, "Mortal man, I am Lady Gwynnin of the House of Dannon," and asks if, or asks who Medieval Spawn is. And his reply to that is, "That's a question I'm trying to answer." So she continues, "I have a message for your race. Our court has always had an accord with your world." So clearly she's, you know, from elsewhere. "We've lived in harmony with it, but the shadow curse in your land is bleeding into ours, and that's our concern. So deal with it, or we will. We will take it upon ourselves to end this pestilence, and our methods will not be discriminating." So she asks if Medieval Spawn understands. He says, "Yes, my lady, I understand." And as they go to depart, Gwynnin says, "Where's that girl gotten to?" And calls for Kildare, who is one of the young blonde girls with Lady Gwynnin's party, who appears to have a green gem on a necklace around her neck. It may be another of the artifacts, we're not sure. What we do know is she manages to bring some vegetation back to life from the barren trees, to which Lady Gwynnin scolds her, "You promised to behave. Is that how a princess acts?" And her response is, "Sorry, but the trees look so sad." "Oh, but that's not your concern." And they leave through a blue glowing portal. Meanwhile, as Medieval Spawn heads back to the village, his squire greets him and says, "I have news," and informs him that they have raised an army. And the story will continue in issue 2. So, one thing I noticed about the art is that Brian Haberlin uses on 90%, if not 95% of the panels, go completely across the page. And there are quite a few large panels as well. A few splash pages, but even on the pages that aren't splashes, you may have, you know, 1 to 3 panels, I'd say. And being that they are so wide and go all the way across the page, you know, almost like a letterbox feel, it makes for a very cinematic feel to the art. And the other thing that adds to that feel of a blockbuster movie is the fact that it's like 32 pages, I think, of story rather than the typical 20 you get in a comic. And plus there are no ads. So it's a lot of story, and it may not sound like it as I was going through and doing the synopsis, but you know, I'm glossing over because, again, even though I'm going into a little more detail, and clearly there are spoilers in what I told you, I do want you to be able to go and read it for yourself if you haven't. So it's a good chunk of story. It sets up Medieval Spawn and who he might be going forward. Of course, it is Medieval Spawn and Witchblade, and so I was curious. I'm like, okay, so where's the Witchblade? Is it going to be that Kildare girl? Is it Lady Gwynnin? Is it somebody we haven't seen before? That part wasn't necessarily clear. But again, the art is spectacular. It's got a painted quality to it, which very much suits this fantasy story that they're telling. And if you go back and listen to the interview I did with Brian Holgan, or Brian Haberlin, rather, you'll hear him talk about one of the things he loves about both the Witchblade character and the Spawn character is that they're legacy characters. They're powers that just about anybody can have. So what that allows you to do is to continually tell fresh tales with fresh characters as you tell the stories of people, I guess you'd say, that are cursed with the power of spawn, or bearers of the Witchblade. So it really opens it up for a lot of different story in different time periods, even across different worlds. And again, it's just, they're both concepts that allow for a lot of freedom for the creator. So the storytelling is very cinematic, as I said. And Haberlin's storytelling from panel to panel is very smooth as well. I mean, there are certain scenes, especially the battle scenes, where you feel like you're watching a movie. That's not to say that this is for the faint of heart. I would say it's for relatively mature readers, you know, at least 13, because there is quite a bit of blood and battle, I guess you'd say. People getting their heads sliced off and the like. So my favorite thing about the art is Medieval Spawn himself. He just looks really, really cool. I feel like Haberlin outdid himself on the design. It's well paced, especially for having a big, you know, flashback in the middle. And it introduces us to half the characters, I guess you'd say, because again, we're not sure we've seen the bearer of the Witchblade even appear yet. And again, I'm curious about Lady Gwynnin and her entourage. We don't really have a clue about who they are yet. So, it definitely sucked me in. I was very pleased with the first issue, and I was really looking forward to the second issue. To be honest, the second issue wasn't quite as good in my mind. We do meet the bearer of the Witchblade, as well as some other characters. And I, you know, if you were to ask me which character, which property I prefer more, Witchblade or Spawn, I prefer Witchblade. I think she's a more interesting character. The story of Witchblade is more interesting. But for whatever reason, I don't know, I felt like the story of Medieval Spawn was more intriguing, more compelling. The being introduced to the Bear of the Witchblade, and that's pretty much the whole story in this issue. It's the whole story is the whole issue for the most part is a flashback to a few years ago where we meet the girl who eventually is going to be the Bear of the Witchblade. I don't know. I guess I just didn't care for her as a character. She's not really that fleshed out. The person who finds her and kind of brings her to the Witchblade is the more interesting of the characters that are in the book. And we don't get any Medieval Spawn. I think he's in one panel, two panels. So it is set up going forward, though, for him to finally fight that scourge that the Bird Queen sent after him. So the art is still really well done. Again, the character that goes in search of the bearer of the Witchblade, the young girl who eventually bears the Witchblade, he seems to be an interesting character. And it also introduces a group that he is a part of, known as the Trusted, which bears more scrutiny, I'll say. But overall, yeah, I just felt like, I don't know, I have a hard time putting my finger on it, but I definitely enjoyed the first issue more. So what I'm hoping is when we put them together, the sum's going to be greater than the parts, right? And again, it's not that issue two was bad. It's just that issue one was better. And maybe it's because when we first meet the bearer of the Witchblade, she doesn't even have the Witchblade. She doesn't get the Witchblade till the very end. So it's almost like we didn't get any Medieval Spawn in the issue. and we didn't get any Witchblade. So maybe that's part of the reason. It's, you know, issue one, although we were being introduced to Medieval Spawn and the premise for the series was being set up, I still feel like we got a lot of story and a good amount of action. And although there is action in this one, it felt more like setup. You know, it felt like it didn't necessarily move the story along that much. It was just, okay, here's the Witchblade half, but it's all in flashback. So not that it doesn't matter, but it didn't move the story forward. Again, I think it's still worth reading, but it just didn't quite capture me the way the first one did. What I do find interesting, though, is, and this is completely fortuitous and wouldn't have happened if I hadn't read, I think it was Witchblade 8? No, it was Witchblade 9, the one with art by Tony Daniel that had a pirate story in there, and talked about the Witchblade being out and found as a treasure that these pirates were searching for, like in the ocean, you know, in the sea, and finding it kind of buried or whatever. And there are different pirate ships and their crews fighting over the Witchblade. And then in this issue, the Witchblade is kind of in the same situation, like where it's found, pirate ships and under the water and such. So much so that in my mind, as I'm reading issue two, I'm like, wait, yeah, I remember that, how there was a pirate. And was that in issue one of Spawn versus Witchblade? Because I remember I just read that somewhere. And I went back before I, you know, did this episode. I went back and reread issue one. And I'm like, no, that wasn't in there. Wait, where was it? And then that's when I remembered, oh, yeah, that was in, I think it was Witchblade 8. No, 9. Again, 9. It may even have been 10. Let me actually look it up really quick because I'm really curious now. I remember it was the Tony Daniel issue, and it was the orange cover, definitely a pirate themed, and it was kind of a flashback. I'm pretty sure it was 9 when Sarah Pizzini was at the courthouse. If you remember, it started like that. She was at the courthouse. She was talking about how that drug dealer had gotten away again, the one that had killed her friend. And she's walking to her car, and she gets sucked in to her car and gets, you know, like through the window, like it's a portal to another world. And she basically relives the battle. It's Witchblade 9 with that art by Tony Daniel. So again, just fortuitous, I just had read that. And I'm definitely going to have to ask Brian Haberlin if he purposefully kind of tied it in to what happened in that story, tied in Witchblade or Medieval Spawn Witchblade 2 into Witchblade 9, or if it just was a total coincidence. But either way, I mean, it's really cool because it harkens back to, you know, one of the earliest issues of Witchblade 9. It could be the same setting, you know, same kind of situation. So I thought that was really, really cool. Let's see, anything else I want to say? No, I guess that's going to do it. Not the longest episode, but again, I don't want to go too much more into detail on issue two because I want you guys to be able to read it for yourself. But I am looking forward to that big fight. I mean, the last page of two is a big splash with Medieval Spawn and his sword raised against the Scourge champion, who has this, it's one of those like battle axes that has like four blades, you know, like cross blades. I'm sure there's a name for it. It's probably not an axe. It's like almost like a mace with four blades on it. But yeah, it looks pretty cool. He tells his troops, "Stay back. He is mine. He has challenged me. Now one of us must die." So looking forward to that. There's also an ad in the back of the book for Medieval Spawn, a resin statue, limited edition, individually sequentially numbered, over 17 inches tall. Comes with helmeted head and swords. You can take the head off, or the helmet off, rather. Man, it looks super, super cool. No, No word on price, though. That's the only ad in the book, because this is another 32-page story. So, again, I feel like you get a big chunk of story for your comic dollar. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. As always, thank you all for listening. Don't forget that Nick and I are going to be at Denver Comic Con the 15th, 16th, and 17th of this month. So coming up a little over a week now. If you're going to be at the show, please let us know. Seek us out. Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram even. Love to meet up, get a picture, and talk a little comics, as well as hook you up with a free comic source lanyard. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are good places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage, such as the aforementioned Denver Comic Con. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.